This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you so much for joining us, and now, enjoy the podcast. This is Raphael Kushner once again, and we are here practicing emotional connection. And today I'm very grateful to have Ray with us. Good morning to you, Ray.
Good morning, Raphael.
You and I have corresponded prior to this call, and you wrote to me a very poignant email in which you talked about just a feeling of despair at the state of the world and people and all of that. And I was really excited to be able to just explore that with you a little bit. Do you want to just start out by kind of rambling, you know, not worrying about having to put it all together and make sense, but just expand a little bit on what you meant and what's involved in all of that for you?
Sure. I think, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but my work path has been in all forms of nonviolence. Mm-hmm. So I have been working for the past close to 30 years now, looking at what I call the dark corners of the planet, looking at all the issues, how people treat other people in other cultures, in their own areas, other species, the environment. So I'm looking at all forms of compassionate living. And in looking at the compassionate living, you end up looking a lot at its opposite, the opposite of compassionate living, which is more looking at the suffering going on the planet. And I think that there is a way that I have absorbed so much of looking at the dark corners on the planet. And even though I've seen a lot of progress, you know, a lot more people looking at how to live compassionately. Mm-hmm. I also see the sort of big picture on the planet, and maybe it's not a big enough picture, but the picture that I do see is that, you know, the environment is going downhill. People care less and less about people. They're more and more isolated and just hunkered down in their house with electronic social life. And how we treat other species as if they're just things. And it feels like over the years it has built up in me. And now I'm in my early 50s and I'm still working in this work. But I have this feeling like, I guess it would be just called really deep despair, but the feeling is it's hopeless. Mm-hmm. Even with all of our work and the progress that you see in some areas, the general picture looks very gloomy on this planet, mm-hmm. and it looks like we're doomed. And it's very hard for me to choose life on a daily basis. Like, it's very hard for me to not feel like, well, if you had a video camera, you'd see what the action I'm doing now. I'm looking as if I'm looking at a watch on my wrist. How much longer do I have on this planet? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just like looking, how much longer do I have to be here, and when do I get to move on to the next thing? Mm-hmm. And it's, I get that it doesn't serve me well. Like, mm-hmm. right now I have tears coming from it. You know, I can lead workshops and be very hopeful, and I can help people feel like they are empowered and like they are very powerful tools for change on the planet and help them find the most loving place in them to communicate their message. I'm so good at doing that. And outside of those workshops, I'm sad. I'm just really sad about this curriculum on Earth School. And it feels like Earth School is a really crazy place to be, and I don't remember registering for it. So I feel like I'm just blah, blah, blah going off. But this is like the general feeling in me is this feeling of just the deepest sadness and helpless and hopeless. And it feels like I remember when I used to really choose life. I used to dance a lot and feel really happy. And I don't have that anymore. And it's hard to live like this, to not feel, to wake up, you know, I could wake up and I could feel gratitude when I wake up. And instead I feel like, phew, and this planet is fucked. And I have so much in my own life to be grateful for, and it's like I can barely see it because I am so much swimming in what is the dark corners of the planet, what's going on the planet.
So I really, you know, hear the fullness in what you're sharing. You know, there's so many aspects to it, especially because you've been doing the work so long, and, you know, it has definitely taken its toll. For a moment, I want to separate the actual work and the perspective that you have on the work these days from the actual experience that you're describing. And, you know, primarily the experience that you're describing, you know, if I heard it correctly, inside of yourself is one of despair. And then as you shared a little bit more about it, it had some other related flavors to it. You talked about it as a deep sadness, also a sense of helplessness and hopelessness.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So my question for you is, it's kind of a simple one, but I think it cuts to the heart of the matter. How do you, let's say, relate to or deal with or handle or approach those feelings when they arise in you?
That's such a good question. The first thing that comes to mind, there's so much that kind of just flooded in when you said that, but I think the first thing that comes to mind is I feel like I'm going to tell you more of a feeling than mentally how I approach it, because the feeling is that a needle has just gone in me and drained all my energy. And my reaction probably does relate to thoughts as well as feelings. My reaction ends up being, what is the point of this work that I'm doing? What's the point of the book that I'm writing? What's the point of the workshop I'm about to lead? It is something that sucks my energy. It makes me difficult. And I don't do it. I don't let myself sleep long or late or do any of that kind of stuff that a depressed person would do, because I don't want to be a depressed person, even if I am. But it makes me have the feeling, that feeling of like, ah, I would just like to go to sleep and not deal with the world.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, hearing you describe, you know, the needle piercing you and sapping your life energy, and then how you describe, you know, not allowing yourself to act like a depressed person. But what I hear in the image that you portray of the life draining out of you is, in fact, a kind of a depression. I mean, that is a signature feature of depression. You know, it saps our life force. And when I look at depression in most people, you know, aside from those that have some kind of significant biochemical imbalance and a sort of a physiological, you know, sort of foundation to their depression, for most people, depression is really exactly what it sounds like, a pushing down, a way of not experiencing something directly. And in your case, of course, it's a natural protective response. It feels like that despair and sadness, you know, and hopelessness and helplessness would be overwhelming to feel. But I would invite you just for a few moments to sort of try on the idea that that might not be true, that you could actually have those feelings, that you could embrace those feelings fully, and that that might actually bring you back to life. As strange as that might sound, you know, kind of going into the dark corners in yourself, not just in the world, might actually bring you to light. So I just want to pause and see, you know, as I first suggest that to you, what do you notice is running through you?
I just, the first visual, I had a visual, and the visual was like a closed door. I'm in a room by myself, and I'm just on a bed face down, and I just get to feel it. I just get to cry for as long as it takes, not with a timer on, and just be with it. Just be with that, because what I do instead of being with it is I get very busy. And I'm incredibly productive on busy tasks. You know, the garden looks great, and the, you know, the house is scrubbed clean, and you know, those kinds of busy things. But I don't just go, okay, I feel incredibly sad, I'm going to let myself just be with it. So that first visual I had was just like, close the door, face down, crying in the bed. And then my next thought was, holy moly, how long is that going to be? You know, how long do you get to do that?
Right.
You know, like, whoa, how many days worth of despair is in there, or tears or whatever? And the physical sensation that goes with it is the one that I feel if I feel like crying, but I don't cry, which is my throat really hurts.
Are you experiencing that in this moment?
Yes.
Okay. So if you would, you know, even though you don't, you're not in a room on a bed lying face down as your image suggested you might be, just in this moment, if you're willing, I would love for you to just bring a kind of a gentle, spacious attention to that place of tightness in your throat. And for a few moments, let your intention be only to be present to it and aware of it in a kind of very up close and personal way, to be curious about it as it presents itself to you in whatever shifting form and in whatever dimension. So I'm going to stop talking for a moment and let you do that. But just to reiterate, you're not trying to understand it. You're not trying to figure it out. You're not trying to make it go away. You're just letting it be there and noticing it in a gentle way. So just do that for a few moments and see what happens. Great, just breathe right into it. And if your mind drifts, just bring it peacefully right back. This feeling in your throat and whatever else comes gets the whole floor right now.
Well, seems like a boring thing for people to listen to on a podcast. A lot of tears coming down, but my throat doesn't hurt as much.
So your throat doesn't hurt as much.
It's
so
hurting
in its
less
place.
And less. Yeah,
okay.
But if,
so
I just,
if you could just allow the tears to keep coming and just, you know, don't worry about those listeners out there. Just keep surfing your felt experience with your attention and just keep noticing what happens.
Well, I got really aware of something I've never, I never thought I was one of those people who tries to protect other people or take care of others before me.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking, oh, you know, oh, this is Raphael's valuable time, or it's the listener's valuable time, or, oh, I'm on the front porch and there's neighbors and I'm at my neighbor's house, and you know, like just all of this, like,
mm-hmm.
instead of just, oh, just feel this. It's a, that I feel like, oh, I'm so busy taking care of what everyone else is feeling or might be feeling or thinks,
mm-hmm.
making sure they're okay, that I come last in that, and it is also immediately I realize it's also what my work has been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm trying to take care of the whole bloody planet.
Mm-hmm. Right, and yep.
And there is no time or place for me in taking care of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is like that's a beyond full-time job.
Right. So. Just as we continue to talk together, just if you can, let your awareness be wide enough so that you can stay connected to the feelings that are flowing through you. You just, it's just wonderful how in like a minute's time, you know, it may have seemed like an eternity to you, but in a minute, the process of connecting directly to the experience, the physical experience of your contraction and the sadness within it brought you this really important insight. You know, that's amazing how that happens. That's the miracle of emotional connection, really. But I want to share with you that really great insight, I think, goes even further, and I want you to just try this on, see if it fits. It seems to me, and maybe because I know how to do this so well, I've done it a lot in my own life, it seems like there's an equation that got set up inside of you that said not just that you must, you know, take care of the planet and not put yourself first, but that if the planet isn't okay, then you can't be okay.
Let me sit with that one for a second. Well, that's, I guess that's true. It feels like if the planet is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
That that threatens me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah,
I can see that and feel it.
And on some level, of course, that's true because of the, you know, ever-present and infinite kind of interconnections that we all have to, you know, each other and to our environment. On the other hand, you know, I would ask you a fundamental question, which is, does the planet benefit in any way from your lack of happiness or well-being?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is if, well, it's not really my lack of happiness or my lack of well-being, but my sort of discontent can be a motivator.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the planet benefits that I do a kajillion workshops and,
mm-hmm.
you know, the things that I do because I'm motivated by my discontent. Or
right.
It could also be that I'm motivated by a positive vision of what could be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is, both of those things could be possible, but let's just stick with the discontent for a moment. You know, you mentioned how you could do a really great workshop with people and then leave the workshop space and, you know, kind of sink into the despair.
Mm.
You know, I would ask a question, since everything is connected and since, you know, wherever you go, there you are,
mm-hmm.
if there's a way, even if it's subtle, even if it's unconscious, that discontent and despair that lives in you perhaps also somehow enters into the teaching space and what you bring to people. And so if that's possible, not even for sure, but if that's possible, then your discontent, while a motivator, might not be, you know, the most effective motivator, since your ultimate goal is to pass on in, you know, beautiful fullness the best of your teaching, you know, and to create the space for people in which they can find their own power to serve.
Go ahead. Well, the first thing that came to mind when you said that, I thought, oh, but in that space, like when I'm with people in a workshop, it's almost like I am in a completely different space. It's almost like, oh, this is my meditation time. This is the time when I'm really present.
Mm-hmm.
And so people come away just going, whoa, oh, that was amazing, you know, and they feel all empowered and full of love, and like they can go out and spread that and do their work. And there is a way that that is my time out from daily life. It's like, oh, this is my time out. This is when I get so present. And I even will do, before I do a workshop, I'll say, okay, spirit, I'm out of here. You get my lips, you get my body, I'm out of here. Just do your magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it works beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And then in my own life, what I don't do is take that same kind of very present time and go, okay, spirit, you know, it's yours.
Well, I really get that, and that that feels, as you describe it, very powerful. And I know that you're giving a gift to people, and I actually know that from what you described, that being in the space of the workshop is kind of therapeutic for you, because it actually allows you to live in the state of a possibility. In other words, to be with people in the way that you know people generally could be with one another. It's like a little bubble in which the vision that you hold is materialized through your presence and connection with people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so,
I also think that I could, I don't know, maybe those workshops would be 10 times more powerful, 10 times more effective, if before and after that workshop, I was caring for me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Right. Well, also, I would like to, you know, share something that may be a little provocative about this, but I get that you are... you know, opening yourself up to be a channel for spirit in those workshops and provide that sacred space for people. And for myself, I hold a value that the kind of spirituality that is the most lasting and beneficial is the kind that is fully integrated, in which we get to be fully present in our body, mind, and also in our personality, and still be that kind of clear channel as you're describing. I'm going to cough for one moment, excuse me. but, and here's the provocative part, it sounds to me that in this beautiful gift that you're giving, there's also a lie. And that's because you're invoking a space and not sharing about how that actually lives in you, not just during, but before and after. And since you are the guide, it's the absence of that truth that, you know, is what I'm calling the lie. And, you know, I've seen this in other contexts as well, where I know that you don't position yourself as a guru per se, but I've seen gurus who are swept into a room of adoring people. They sit on their throne. They are beaming radiance and divinity. And then when the session is over, they are swept off the throne, out the door. And I'm thinking, what we all really need to see is what happens off the throne. You know, if this person has a deep sense of realization, how do they approach their to-do list? You know, what happens to them when they don't get enough sleep, or when their kids, you know, are up all night, or the neighbor's annoying dog is barking all the time? And there's something missing from the teaching if it doesn't have the wholeness of how it is lived in daily life.
Right.
So Well, let me just pause there, yeah, and just see what your reaction is to that.
I think my first reaction, well, okay, I'll give you the whole thing. My first reaction, though, was, oh, but I do share that in the workshops, which is actually what makes them kind of powerful, where I say, sometimes I feel so much despair, I just go, fuck the world, fuck it. That I do share that in the workshops.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But there is still, I think that in a way there is still a lie in it, because I'm sharing that with them, that I do feel that feeling a lot, and they don't actually get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see me in the despair. They don't see my face change to look 30 years older because I'm so incredibly sad. They don't see that. They see bright light.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though I'm saying the words and I'm saying, look, this is what I go through.
Mm-hmm.
I go through this, you know, and I don't always communicate compassionately. And sometimes, you know, it's like, and I swear a lot in workshops because I'm having to say the kind of things I think or say outside of the workshop. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling them about the experience, but they don't. I think that sometimes people want to see the workshop leader as something. So it doesn't matter what you say. They don't see that, and I'm not showing that part of myself because I don't actually feel the despair when I'm with these people.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as I might tell them about that, you're right that there is a lie in it, because they aren't with me after the workshop, before the workshop, in my home. They aren't with me when I'm just a wreck.
So, right, now let's just take it to the next step. Since this work that you do is so emotionally challenging and would be for anybody, and we've already identified that, you know, you put care of others and care of the planet in front of care for you, if you were to just envision right now what you might do in terms of the workshop process, the before and the after, that would be good self-care, what comes for you? What if you said that that teaching the workshop isn't just about going there and having, you know, whatever printouts you have and letting spirit come through you and teaching the curriculum and holding the space, but it also is what you do before and after, can you imagine what that would look like? If those were requirements, what would happen? What would the self-care be?
Oh, God, it looks so good. It would be, you know, even if I'm in the midst of a crazy schedule at a conference or a workshop or whatever, that I take the time to meditate each day, to do yoga, to do those things that feel like they're for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't, I get caught up in stuff. Or even just say, you know, when people say, oh, we want to eat with you, to say, yes, that would be great, but I really do want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a time when I need to really just taste my food and be present, or I'm going to feel hungry for the whole conference, which is what I end up feeling, because people say, oh, I want to have lunch with you, but what they want to do is continue the workshop.
Right, right.
So,
no, I totally understand that. When I when I teach at Kripalu, the yoga yoga university, as I call it, in Massachusetts, I'm always grateful because they have a silent dining room. Not the whole dining room, but there's a room you can go to if you choose to have a silent meal. And during my teaching experiences, for the same reason you describe, I go there and I just relish the silence. And I wish I had, you know, the energy and the focus to be able to, during the break time, continue being with people, you know, as fully as possible. But I just can't. I can't. So that's something I accept, and I let myself be, you know, nourished by the food and by the silence.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes total sense to me what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, but what I would invite you to realize, or to try on anyway, to see if it's true for you, is the idea that, you know, just like somebody who works, you know, in a nuclear power plant, to use a strange analogy, you know, part of their process is, you know, they come in and they have to do a scrub down and they put on special clothes. And there's a whole process before which, you know, they can enter the reactor core, you know, to do their work. And then when they're done, you know, there's the whole shower down, et cetera, et cetera. you are working in such a high-stakes arena because you choose to see the pain of the world and to feel the pain of the world directly. Mm-hmm. And so my invitation to you would be to recognize that that self-care that you're talking about is actually a job requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you don't do it, then you burn out, the life is sapped out of you, and you lose the passion, you know, for life, just as you described. That it's that without that self-care, what you describe as that despair that you feel is destined to happen.
Oh, I love that. It's a job requirement. It's part of my job description.
Mm-hmm. It is. It absolutely is.
I don't know. And that was just like there was something about that it, you just saying that it was almost like being given permission.
Mm-hmm.
Or some permission mm-hmm. from who knows who, Raphael, or somebody bigger than you. But, like, oh, I have, not only do I have permission, but it's a requirement. Oh,
mm-hmm.
God.
Yeah.
I'm required to do this.
Right. There's no way you can get out of it, you know. If you don't do the prep and the aftermath that we're talking about, if you don't take care of yourself in that way, then you don't get to do the workshop. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next part of that is that if you can explain and present to people that, not just that you feel terrible sometimes and you have despair and it's so hard and you just want to give up, but that this is how you do it,
right.
Then you're modeling something for them that is, you know, really valuable.
Yeah. That sounds exactly right.
Yeah. So, you know, before when we had a, you know, kind of humorous moment and you were saying you didn't think that your experience of, you know, your throat sensation releasing and tears coming, you know, was particularly valuable to hear on a podcast, my response is that the exact opposite is true, that that's the most valuable thing that people could hear, because we're having this conversation right now only because you allowed yourself to pay attention to your felt sensation and didn't have conditions upon it, kept paying attention. There was an easing and a release, and here we are around these insights that are you know, really valuable for you in terms of self-care, in terms of how to approach your job, in terms of how not to have a lie within it. So those things came directly out of your compassionate attention to your embodied experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And my throat not hurting was actually, I mean, I needed to go through that process. My throat doesn't hurt now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so that was a small picture of what, you know, regularly scheduled maintenance looks like for Ray, the service worker.
Yeah.
And that's why that self-care before and after is so important, because really, from my perspective, yes, the self-care might mean treating yourself to things or getting more rest or meditating, but the essence of the self-care is exactly what you did in that moment that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The connection to your felt experience in a compassionate way, mm-hmm. that's what will keep you alive and vibrant and ready to do the work in front of you.
Yeah, that sounds right. Feels right.
So despair, hopelessness, helplessness, sadness, all of those things can be met exactly as you described. And what happens is that you find out in the process that they are weather systems that move through you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you create space for them to do that, they do move through as quickly and fully and as easily as possible. And then you're back in touch with your own nature, with the expansion that is part of who you are.
Mhm. Yeah.
Mhm.
It sounds right. I mean, I used to have a really strong meditation practice, and when I had it, I called them my storms. Oh, a storm's coming through.
Mm-hmm.
But it would go through quickly in
right.
the meditation practice. If I don't meditate, which I haven't been meditating lately, which is really weird for me because I've been doing it since 84,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't been giving myself that time or space lately. When I don't do it, it's like the storm just hovers. It's just like a storm that won't leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it really is, you know, required maintenance.
Yeah.
It is self-care that you don't have a choice. You if you don't do it, it's just, well, the result is what is the despair. But the particular quality of despair is depressive, which is the pushing down. So when you do let the storms come through, you just no longer have that experience anymore. It's that simple.
Hmm.
But what I'd like to do, you know, if we can stay on this really important topic for a little while longer, is jump to the other side of the issue that you were raising, which is about, you know, the state of things and maybe the ultimate destruction of the planet. And I want to bring your attention to what seems to me to be the case, and that is that in a very natural way, that's, you know, true for most of us, it seems like the work that you do is connected, or the way you feel about the work that you do is connected to results. That if you do the work and it doesn't succeed, then somehow it's not valuable or something like that.
What is the point? I've done it all these years. I'm just giving you the self-talk that I do.
Good, good.
Uh-huh. What is the point? I've done it all these years, and yes, there's been some progress, and we've come a long way in certain areas, but we're going to hell in a handbasket. It's
mm-hmm.
a bloody fucking mess.
Mm-hmm.
You can bleep that out right in the podcast.
Yeah, don't worry.
So that is sort of how it feels. It's like, wow, I give all this work to it. You know, I mostly volunteer my time in it. I work my butt off in it. Why have I done this? You know, I make $10,000 a year. I could have made $300,000 a year. I should have just, like, gone for it, because what was the point of all this?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of that going on.
Right.
You know, and, you know, the majority of people don't give a damn, and so why do I do this? And da, 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 da.
Right. So the first thing I would say is that, well, it's more in the form of a question. You know, can you or I or anybody else ultimately know what the future will bring?
No.
We can't, right?
No.
Right. And also, can you or I know what is really necessary in order for the changes that we seek to come about?
No.
We can't.
No.
So, you know, perhaps some great degree of destruction is necessary, and maybe it's the only thing that would require the very transformation that you seek.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that that is true, because I can't know that, and no one can, but it's possible that it could be true.
Yeah.
And so when we look at the near term in regard to any project of service that we, or social change that we put forth, and then it doesn't happen, and then, you know, we go into our own resistance. There's a way in which we're kind of playing God, where we're assuming that we know so much more than we can.
Right, like this is when it should happen, this is how it should happen, and this is how it's going to look.
Right.
We know the whole plot, even though we're not, maybe we're part of the screenplay, but we're not the writers.
Right.
Of it.
Right. So there can be a great freedom in just recognizing that it's not mine to know.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if it looks bad, and particularly if I feel bad, mm-hmm. I need to embrace those feelings. I need to use that compassionate attention that you used a few moments ago to bring me to a state of peacefulness inside of myself so that I can benefit from that and then I can be the most effective also from that place. So it's not that when we have such a response that it's wrong or bad or we need to change it. It's just a recognition that it's really ultimately ours to be present to what's happening within us as opposed to be assuming that we know anything at all about the future.
Yeah. It's so funny. Sometimes I know that or I remember that,
mm-hmm.
but it's I think this relates to the other part of the self-care, that when I'm not doing stopping and meditating or doing those other necessary parts of self-care,
mm-hmm.
I forget exactly what we're talking about now. I just forget it. And it's
mm-hmm.
it's like this very simple truth that we can't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I lose that. I lose that thread of, that is one of the truths that we can't know.
Right.
And if I lose that thread, then I do get into the thing that you spoke about, which is that it should have this exact outcome and this is exactly how it should look and
mm-hmm.
and that I think I know.
Right.
Something I don't know.
And also, it's this planet and all of its creation that you love so much.
Mm-hmm.
But everything that you despair so much about is also part of that whole.
Right.
Right. So if we would call this for a moment, God's creation or the creation of spirit or whatever words, are right for each individual can be used in this spot. It's all part of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
The light wasn't created without the shadow.
Right.
And, there's a famous quote from Robert Bly, I think I mentioned this in another conversation that I recorded, that says, the bigger the front, the bigger the back. and that's a Chinese proverb that relates particularly to teachers and, experts and things like that. But it's true also of anybody who wants to promote a sane, healthy, sustainable world, that if we only are in our goodness and our purity, we're denying all the rest that is a part of us because we are, a hologram of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when we recognize everything that's in us that is dark and embrace that with our compassionate attention, we become whole. And so what happens is the front and the back disappear, and instead what you have is a circle, in which everything is included and everything is sacred. And so if we do that in ourselves, the next step is to do that with the world or with creation itself, to
mm-hmm.
see the whole circle. And that's a completely different orientation, because what that means is that everything is as it is supposed to be in this moment. It has mm-hmm. to be, because it is part of all that is arising.
Right.
And how we then move forward to try to transform it into something that is more sustainable, that is more integrated, that becomes the next question. But that's a question that we can only address successfully once we have accepted what is.
Mm-hmm.
So for all social activists, the greatest enemy, quote unquote, is the shutdown that comes from not being able to accept what is.
Right. Yeah, how do I forget that one? I've come to that conclusion before.
Yeah.
They're really looking at, is it true that little plane shouldn't be flying over my house right now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course it's not true, because it is flying over my house. So it should be. Like, I can get to that truth, and then I forget it, and I get lost in dark muck. Things should be different, and this is how they should be, and da-da-da-da.
Well, Suzuki Roshi said that there is no such thing as an enlightened person. There is only an enlightened moment. So
mm-hmm.
you've had moments in which it was fully there, and then like all of us, because it's stressful, because it's difficult, because we're overwhelmed by challenges and the speed of things, you know, you kind of took an existential nap.
That's such a nice way to put it.
So,
you know what I like about putting it that way? Like, existential nap makes it, I mean, I could do a lot of, like, beat myself up for not remembering that these truths all the time. Like, how could you forget? You know, it was big as life. Come on. But existential nap is just like, you know, there's no blame in it. You just took an existential nap. You didn't suddenly become, you know, the chainsaw massacrist. You know, you're not an evil person. You just took a nap. Now you're waking up again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a much gentler way to look at it, because I'll just think, oh, I thought that I had some wisdom. I guess I don't. You know, I'm such a loser. I can just, like, totally go into that.
Well, all, you know, all of this work is about remembering.
Yeah.
You know, it's about remembering our true nature. And it's wonderful how you mentioned, you know, the gentle quality. Someone wrote me an email recently, and they said, you know, what I got out of the workshop, you know, and from you was this quality of gentle strength. And she was wondering how those things could go together, and felt like she had seen that. And, you know, I appreciated her reflection of me, but the point wasn't that it was me or that I was doing anything. The point was that the compassionate attention that you just brought to yourself and that I was helping people do at that workshop, that that is the strongest and also most gentle approach I know. You know, it's paradoxical, but it's true that we can make miracles, we can move mountains when we allow ourselves to accept in a gentle way what is moving through us. Everything else is a kind of violence, in my experience. And, you know, in terms of the old mystical adage, you know, as without, so within, when you don't give your attention fully and compassionately to the despair and the sadness and the hopelessness and the helplessness, then you also can't accept the dark outside of you, and vice versa.
Right.
But, you know, in this regard, I also just want to come to another really important point. I'll put it to you in the form of a question, even though it's a sort of rhetorical question and we can guess the answer. But if someone put a starving child on your doorstep and you knew somehow that it wasn't going to live past tomorrow, would you still feed it today? You know, would you give it nourishment, or would you just turn away?
That is such a great way to put it, because I've had people ask me, not in relation to a child on a doorstep, of course, but of course I would feed this child. I would be like, every pleasure imaginable, come on, you know, let's just give you everything pleasurable and have you feeling good. Of course you would do that. You'd give so much energy to that.
Right.
That people have asked me in, like, radio interviews or whatever, when I'm doing workshops places, oh, do you really think you're going to change the world? And then I just have to stop and think about it when they ask it. And I say, well, I would like if I had that much power. But the reality is I don't even know. I don't know if I'm going to change the world. But, okay, in this moment, maybe for this person or this being in front of me or this tree, okay, life is good for this one right now in this moment. So I do it.
And I would follow up on that to suggest that you do it because it's who you are. That it's an expression of your heart, your deepest self, to serve in this way. And that as a result, it's a kind of privilege to be able to assert your essence in the world in this loving way.
Yes.
Completely apart from any result or outcome.
Yeah. It is a privilege. And I feel that even like the workshops that I'm talking about, wow, that 100 people will come take the time, be in a room with me for a day or 3 days and say, I trust you enough to be here and to come hear what you have to say, that's a privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? And you get to convene a space in which people open up, they share their own truth with you in a vulnerable way. You convene that space of openness that actually is the reality of what you're trying to transform the world to. You know, it's a laboratory, a microcosm of what's possible, and what a privilege to be able to convene that and to be able to have people join you in that. And I know for myself that whether I'm, you know, opposing the war in Iraq or, you know, dealing with inequities that come from globalization, whatever it is, I'm always at my best when I'm connected to myself. I let those storms that you were describing before pass through, and I realize that in this moment that I'm protesting on the corner, or that I'm sending an email to my congressperson, or that I'm writing a blog, or any of the things that I can do to try to affect social change, I'm at my best when I recognize that it's my heart's calling, that I recognize that it's a gift to myself more than anything else to be able to express my truth in this way. And I'm at my best because whatever comes through me is the most true and the most hearable by anybody who, you know, might actually be open to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I'm writing something that only people who already agree with me, or if I'm protesting in such a way that only people who already believe what I believe are going to appreciate, then it just becomes, you know, a kind of insulated situation that's more to make ourselves feel not powerless, but it is not actually the exertion of power.
Right.
And that's a really key distinction, because often when it comes to service and social action, it's the feeling of powerlessness inside of ourselves, that helplessness you described before, that is intolerable. And so we make choices, we plan activities that seem like they're really thought out to be the most beneficial. But often what happens is they're really designed to just help us feel more okay inside.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm always telling people that, you know, when you resist any particular emotion, your life is run by that resistance. You make choices to avoid the feeling, not choices out of freedom or out of what might be in your highest good or the highest good of others.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another way that embracing some of those darker feelings, like the helplessness, brings you to a place where you can see more clearly and you can make wiser, more creative and effective choices in terms of how you want to give your gifts.
Yeah. Well, I have a completely different feeling. I feel actually like a completely different person than the one who first sat down and got on the phone with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we just took a little bottle brush and cleaned the crud out.
So I'm like the emotional Roto-Rooter man today.
Yeah, you are. Well, it was more gentle than that, though. It was definitely just a little gentle bottle brush.
Well, I think that, you know, going back to what I said before about it being a remembering, I mean, that is a gift for me if what I get to do is just help someone clear something away that allows them to remember, you know, who they already are, what they already know. And, you know, you are a person of such deep presence and such great wisdom and such wonderful service that it isn't hard, you know, to bring you back to that place. So I would just invite you going forward to realize that when you feel sapped, when the needle goes in and the life force comes out, that all you need to do is turn your attention to what you're feeling in your body and ride that to whatever expansion and insight and healing and self-care comes. And you'll be right back in this place.
Well, thank you so much, Raphael.
You're more than welcome. And before we end the recording, I just want to say that, you know, I came out of the womb, you know, as an activist, and so this is a very special topic for me. And when I say I came out of the womb, what I mean is that I was starting, you know, environmental organizations when I was 8 and didn't really have any model for that in the world. You know, it's just something that came to me. It might have been part of my Jewish heritage. I'm not sure. But you know, I was so struck in this past week when there was, I don't know if you saw this, but there was all this attention to these diaries of Mother Teresa that have been published.
Oh, yeah.
That speak to 50 years or so in her life in which she writes of feeling, you know, separate from God. She feels God's absence. She feels lost. Mm-hmm. She's not sustained. And she's, you know, doing the work that she's doing because it's there for her to do, but she's not doing it out of a sense of privilege. She's not doing it out of a sense of connection with spirit. She's really, you know, alienated in that way. And it's interesting because on the one hand, we just say the words Mother Teresa and it evokes this saint and, you know, what great service she went to be with the poorest of the poor. What's interesting is that, you know, I've never met her. I didn't work with her. But what I have heard from people who have met her and have worked with her is that also a lot of the time she wasn't a very nice person. She was really hard to deal with.
Yeah.
And if that's true, I don't think of that as a condemnation. I wouldn't fault her for that. My goodness, anybody, you know, could turn away from, you know, what she had to experience or just gird themselves and become, you know, sometimes brittle, sometimes pushy, or maybe even she had to become, you know, demanding just to get the job done. But my point is, apropos of our discussion here today, that if you do whatever work you do, you know, at the soup kitchen or, you know, writing to your congressperson, whatever, if you do it from a place of disconnection, if you don't feel that heart's calling that you and I were just talking about, if you don't do it from a place of acceptance of the way things are, it will be brittle, you know. It won't always feel good. You won't always be, you know, your best, most kind and compassionate self. And right now I'm not speaking to you directly. I know you got this message, you know, loud and clear through your own process today. But I thought it was so fascinating that, you know, all of that came out.
Yeah.
I was so thrilled that all of that came out. You know, it's because the bigger the front, the bigger the back.
Exactly.
And what a privilege to be able to get inside the circle and see that even those who are icons of, you know, powerful social change wrestle with the very same things that, you know, you and I have been wrestling with today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also, there's something about when those realities come out about these people who we hold up on these iconic pedestals that, oh, they're another human like me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, which means they struggle like I struggle. Oh, which also means I could be somebody who's effective and powerful and working my passion as strongly as this person did. It doesn't mean that she's this separate holy person, you know, who's so different from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you are the, you know, unique fingerprint of the divine that is Ray, and your job is to be the fullest Ray that you can possibly be, even as you understand the oneness, you know, that's beneath it all. And her job is to be, you know, the fullest, greatest version of Mother Teresa that she can be, and fulfilling each of our own innate potentials is really all that we can do. So if we look at an icon or a leader in any field and we see what's missing in us, of course, that's a recipe for our own resistance. But as you're saying, if we see what's possible for us, then we can let their work inspire us not to be like them, but to be, you know, the fullest version of ourselves.
Yeah. So beautiful.
And what I'd like to close with is just to come back to the very simple and very practical piece, you know, for you that came up today, which is that apart from some of our spiritual exploration, self-care is a job requirement.
Yeah.
You can be pretty sure that if you don't add that self-care before and after the workshops, and just as a kind of an ongoing practice through your days in between workshops, that you'll come back to this place of despair. But as soon as you add it, you get to feel the way you feel right now.
Yep.
So, there are people out there who are listening who are nurses, who are doctors, who are teachers, you know, who are working behind the counter at Starbucks. And the same is true for them. You know, the self-care is not negotiable. And there are mothers out there who will say, there's no way, I can't give myself that care. You know, I just don't have the time with my many kids and I'm the only one here at home. And, you know, on some level that's true. But on another level, if they don't find a way to give it to themselves, then the quality of the care they give is bound to be affected.
Yep.
So really, you know, if we titled, this session, it would really be, you know, self-care is a job requirement for every single one of us.
Yeah, that sounds so right.
Yeah. So thank you very much for, being open and sharing of yourself to help get this message out there. I think it's really valuable. And today, you've actually, without even knowing you were going to do it, you took care of yourself, but you provided a great service in the process for others.
Thank you so much, Raphael.
You are welcome.
Wonderful.
And now I'm going to hit the button that will end this recording. Hold on a second. You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional